Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 351.
Damn. Hostiles.
We were having this conversation. Hostiles? Hostiles? But a hostile sounds like,
well, yeah,
like the horror movie.
Isn't that what we saw? I went and saw Hostiles 3.
Hostiles 3. More hostiles.
More hostiler.
Hostiler.
So, hostiles.
Sure.
That's such a weird, I think we had the same, I saw it with Brad, and I think we had the same conversation, and I talked to Joe about it too. It's like, how do you, when you say you're being hostile, I would say you're being hostile. I wouldn't say you're being hostile. I think it's just shorthand. Like,
I feel like either pronunciation is acceptable, although I will say I feel like we should probably say hostile just to help distinguish
sure,
it from yeah. hostile.
But I would, but you would say you're being hostile. Don't be hostile.
Yeah,
like as shorthand.
I would like if you, I was talking. We, yeah. I would say don't. I'm like, they're being so hostile. Like I wouldn't say they're being so hostile.
I think I say they're being so hostile.
Potato, potato.
He also says it while he's wearing a monocle.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah,
and he is playing Angry Birds 3 with his pinky in the air.
Yes.
Right now, so
the only way one should play Angry Birds 3. So we should go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Dan.
This is Brad.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Some quick shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on iTunes. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. While you're on your internet machine, you can go to Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. You can like our page. Perhaps, if you're so inclined, you could even join the League of Show Sharers while you're there. That would be delightful.
Heard of it.
Yeah. So there are shameless plugs, and now Joe will synopsisize.
Take it away, Joe.
Wrestling.
So
red trunks.
So
Wikipedia will
Wikipedia
synopsisize.
Will help us.
So this is a hard one. Brad and I talked about this. So I saw this with Brad yesterday, and we knew Joe was not on the show, so I invited him to come on the podcast. And as soon as we left the movie, I was like, this is going to be a tough one to go beat by beat. I mean, it's a very simple movie. It doesn't mean it's bad, but they go from point A to point B. Some stuff happens in between. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, that's the movie. It's a very...
Like Lord of the Rings.
There's
yeah, I mean...
So simple.
Yeah. So it's just like, how do you...
Some stuff.
Yeah, I mean, some stuff happens. It's kind of like a road movie with this. Some stuff happens on the way. I mean, they're traveling point A to point B.
Yeah, I mean, there's like a moodiness to this. And it takes its own damn sweet time, and I was kind of dreading it. I was like, oh man, it's long. And I just wasn't feeling it. And I was even more disappointed because there was a ton of people there. I was like, damn it, you know, because
I can't play on my phone.
I can't get some work done.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, it's good looking movie.
Yeah.
Very good looking.
And,
I'm of two minds because it's not that it's not a good looking movie, but and this is unfair of me to do, but given the subject matter and given the style of the film, I just kept going, but it's not John Ford.
That is unfair.
Yeah.
that is unfair.
But not many are.
Yeah, no. but because of the subject matter and because of the landscape that they were photographing, like, I just kept wanting to be like, oh, but couldn't you just be John Ford?
Couldn't you?
Is that too much to ask?
Yeah.
For you to be one of the best film directors of all time?
Yeah, I do think it was a beautiful film nonetheless, and I agree. I mean, it's hard to get that, you know, magnificent of a scope in as John Ford would. But yeah, I really liked the look of the film, and I feel like we haven't had a good Western in a while. Like, I mean, Hell or High Water is
Magnificent Seven.
Yeah, I mean, Hell or High Water was a modern Western, but it wasn't a Western. Yeah. I mean, this is like, you know, right.
I think you'd probably have to go back to True Grit.
Yeah. And that was 2000.
The remake.
Yeah,
which I liked.
I did too.
Okay,
I think
I know some people are like weird about it, but
no, I liked it. I mean, I think the original's great, and I think the remake did a really good job.
Yeah, this,
I don't like the ending.
This is
that
a
remake.
It didn't bother me.
This where they just kept going, and he's dead. It's like, oh god.
This is a spiritual successor, I think, to Unforgiven.
Hmm. Yeah, I see that.
You know, it's definitely revisionist.
Absolutely.
Unforgiven's so good.
It is, but
it's such a good movie.
But I mean, this is also, this takes, you know, that dealt with good guys and bad guys.
Yeah.
Right. You know, this is cowboys and Indians.
You know, I will say, for this being a revisionist Western, and really in today's world, like, I feel weird calling it revisionist because it almost, it sounds derogatory, like,
they're ruining
Westerns. But You almost have to be. There has to be some balance in a modern film between the cowboys and the Indians in terms of moral equivalency.
You should explain that, though, because I think for someone, probably especially because of our age, like Brad and I, like to me, it seemed like, I mean, maybe I knew it was a little sugar-coated, but there still was some very harsh treatment. Like, how is this revisionist?
Well, that's what I was going to say is I think As a revisionist Western, I think it's probably more balanced than a lot of the revisionist Westerns because I feel like so originally with old time Westerns from the, you know, beginning of cinema up until the mid 60s, there's a handful of Westerns that have some sympathy for Indians, mostly from John Ford, right? Mm-hmm. Searchers and Broken Arrow was one of the first ones to actually like have some sympathy for the Indians and have some moral equivalency of like, hey, look what they got going on. That wasn't no cup of tea, you know. And but by and large, it was Indians bad, cowboys good. Like, it was just not up for debate. The Indians are killing the white people, and that's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And there was never any thought given to, well, but we went to where they lived, and then they killed us. Like, that's like, they weren't going into.
But we gave them blankets.
Yes, filled with smallpox.
Yes.
Wouldn't this not be revisionist, though? Like, because this is actually paying attention to what.
But it's revisionist from the scope of, like, it's revising what the genre did for generations. You know, and so then in the 70s, you started to get Westerns that were more attuned to that sort of mentality of like, hey, the Indians had some legitimate complaints. Right.
I mean, I think you got Peckinpah, Sergio Leone. I mean, you start to look at some of the 70s output of Westerns and it's not, you know, they weren't the anti-hero. And the sort of the morality meter went back towards the middle a little bit.
Right.
It was like, not so fast.
Yeah, because I think that, like, in some ways, maybe the pendulum swung a little too far in that it became, like, the battles between the frontiersmen, I guess you can say it because that's what they were, and Indians were brutal. And Indians did a lot of awful things,
This
movie opens up with. And I think in a lot of movies for a long time, like, you didn't necessarily get that, or they put it in a prism of really like, oh, but these white folks had it coming, you know, or they'll pick cowboys to get killed by Indians. I'm using cowboys as a very broad you know.
But they were the bad ones.
But they would kind of do it to, sure. They would, from a storytelling device, they would pick like really people for the Indians to kill. So you would sympathize. Well, this movie does not pull its punches. It opens with a baby getting shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's rough. I mean, like, that's, you know.
Two little girls.
Yeah.
A husband who's just trying to cut some lumber.
Right.
And a baby. A
right.
mother holding a baby.
Right. Yeah. And so when I first saw this, and I mean, it is definitely rough seeing that stuff happen. I was trying to figure out where they were going with it. Like, was he a part of some squad that wiped out an entire tribe?
No, he was just on their land.
That, I mean, and that's what, as far as we learn in the movie. It's just, I was thinking, like, how are they going to justify this killing? Like, he had to have done something.
Well, it's a mirror of a scene that we see later on.
Yeah.
Of being on someone's land.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie's called Hostiles, plural, because
it's a lot of hostiles.
It's broad.
In it.
It's broad, and it's pretty much everybody.
And the Comanches, from everything I've read, were, like, the most savage. And I mean that lowercase. I'm not calling them savages, but their actions were the most savage of all the Indians. And like the
would you say the most hostile?
You could say that.
Okay,
yeah,
might be.
And or you could say hostile. I wouldn't.
Yeah,
I wouldn't begrudge it. And so part of the problem with the Comanches is the fight that they had, especially in the Texas area. But the fight that they had with settlers was that. The problem derived from the fact that the Comanches did not think that the settlers were people. They literally didn't think that they were human beings. Conversely, neither did the settlers.
Right.
Right. And so, like, neither side thought that they were really fighting people. Mm-hmm. And so they could do whatever they wanted.
Yeah, they were animals.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's part of what made it just so effing brutal. Yeah. And there's a really good book. Obviously, there's a really good movie called The Searchers, but there's a really good book called The Searchers. It came out like 5 or 6 years ago, and it's it tells the story that The Searchers is based on as best as can be reconstructed, because there's a lot of unreliable narrators who told that story. And it's funny as the guy kind of explains the story, you keep seeing how each generation reframes mm-hmm. that whole like Indian abduction story for its new political prism, you know. And but this book tells the story of that The Searchers is based on, and then it tells the story behind the writing of the book, and then it tells the story behind the making of the film. And it's fascinating, and like this, and I really enjoyed it. And the author really kind of goes into the brutality that the Comanches would perpetrate on people, but also, or settlers, I should say, and that, but also doesn't shy away from the same brutality that the settlers perpetrated on the Comanches. And so it's a very balanced telling of that era.
Yeah, I mean, the way this movie opens is, it is. It's obviously it's an intentional thing, but they also do something subtle that I thought was almost brilliant. You know, because we do see this family, you know, the mother's homeschooling the kids, just teaching them about adverbs.
Right.
And the husband's out there just trying to cut some wood. And then all of a sudden some people appear over the hill, and it turns out they're Indians. We find out later they're the snake people. There's no mercy. They're there to take the horses, and the woman even encourages her husband, let's just go.
Right.
But we get a sense like that's not, they weren't going to let them
that ship
go out
sailed.
The back door.
Yeah.
Like, and they do, they wipe out everybody. And the mother basically flees, and she's holding at this point, it's like, baby's probably dead.
Oh, right. That's hard to watch her carrying. I mean, she does not let go even until later scenes when we come back to her, let go of the baby that has been shot and is clearly dead.
And they pursue her. And then we see that they kind of, we get the sense that they've probably moved on. They can't find her. She's hiding underneath a tree. And then we hear this crying, and it, you know, goes to black, and we hear this weeping and screaming, and it's not her. And then we immediately cut to an Indian woman and her child, and we see a husband, you know, an Indian man being, you know, roped and dragged, and it's like they flip it
Right.
You know, and it's, to me, I was like, that was really, really smart because we're assuming like we're supposed to align with, okay, Indians bad.
Settlers good.
And it's like, nope, because they immediately switch to a woman who's going through the same kind of pain, the same kind of anguish and watching her husband. And there's Christian Bale just kind of matter-of-factly watching this transpire.
Yeah. That's the gig.
Yeah.
But we also find out throughout the movie, and what I really like what the film does is how there is that balance and it goes back and forth mm-hmm. between Christian Bale's character, who is he a captain mm-hmm. in the army?
Yeah.
He's a captain, and then there's a chief that for 7 years, this chief has been imprisoned by them. And so they've both done terrible things, but throughout the film, they go back and forth, and these two mm-hmm. characters, these two men, have to come to terms with the idea that they've both done horrible things and mm-hmm. neither of them is right in doing them, but they have to find some way to move on and eventually work together throughout this film. And I just really like that back and forth between them and how it doesn't really paint one as good or one as bad. I mean, in Christian Bale's character's mind, I mean, obviously the Indians are all bad because of these terrible things. They've killed his friends.
Right.
They've done all these awful things, but think about the things he's done, and we learn that, you know, he didn't exactly give them right. too fair of a treatment over the years. So
it's kind of funny because this is like very similar to, I think a lot of people think this is like Dances with Wolves, and it's not. You know, like that one is very broad, the kind of like shift that the character goes through, and this is notches,
incremental.
It's subtlety, and I think that's a lot of the portrayal. So Christian Bale is just really, he's just so good to watch in this because he's doing so little with a lot of his, you know, mannerisms and his reaction, but it's like, God, this is a good reminder of how good of an actor he actually is.
I think my only complaint about Christian Bale in the role is I feel like he's too young for it. I feel like this role probably ultimately calls for an actor that's a little bit older and a little bit more grizzled.
Someone that's going to retire after their 20 some odd years.
Right. Like, but I mean, I guess at the same time, if you think about it, I mean,
they start young.
And those years,
you started when, I mean, there were a lot of people that fought the Civil War when they were, mm-hmm. they signed up when they were 14, 15 years old.
As his friend.
Yeah. So like you could do 20 years and be done by the time you're 38.
I mean, well, he's 40. You could live to 40.
Yeah. Right.
He's 43. So, right, yeah. I mean,
so it makes
if he started at 18.
I guess he just doesn't look like the sort of guy who spent 20 years on the frontier.
Yeah.
I think they did a good job casting around him though with his crew, it makes him subordinates, that make him appear older than, you know, that might counterbalance
that's fair.
That.
With Jesse Plemons and with the other kid who had a
Timothée Chalamet,
weird line readings.
Yeah.
I liked them, but it was
clearly Chalamet, he is of some French, descendant. Like I thought it was interesting. I mean, he obviously was in Call Me by Your Name. Mm-hmm. He was in Lady Bird, two Oscar nominated films.
There's already a Lady Bird too.
What? Wow.
That thing's a juggernaut.
So he was in those films that and then you see him in this little role. I thought that was odd, but yeah, his French accent type of thing. They call him Frenchy as a nickname. He doesn't have that big of a part. Spoiler alert. Yeah. I did think there was something weird going on there. I'm like,
and he's a cook. So, typical.
He said,
but he wasn't making croissants.
Yeah. Baguette. I've got the baguettes, gentlemen.
So Christian Bale's character is tasked with getting Yellow Hawk basically back to his home territory so he can die.
Yeah. It's also PR, but the government has decided enough's enough. Time to just move on.
Right.
And, you know, it's been
1892.
Years.
I don't know that we started off by saying this. So it's like this era is definitely coming to a close. And this is the era when you would start to see Indians segueing into like Wild West shows and like the same Indians a lot of times that had been scalping settlers for years are now in these Wild West traveling shows as like comic relief and come and look at the savage and it you know, like it was a weird time.
It was pre, you know, it's like F Troop.
Yeah.
Pre, you know,
except none of
like
the Indians
sort of
were
Italian.
Were Jewish vaudevillians.
Or vaudevillians.
That was always a strange choice, but okay. No, I mean, and
dug it. Well, like, yeah. On the one hand, I know it's offensive, but like on the other hand, I love the fact that like they didn't even try. That they were like, "This is ludicrous," and we know it. Like it
Frank
felt
DeCorva.
It felt very knowing. Like they weren't trying to trick you.
No, no. Yeah, it's interesting because we see character actors. Jesse Plemons is a good one where it's like, "Oh, is he going to be the douche?" No. And Stephen Lang, you know, who, you know, is so good in so many movies.
I love Jesse Plemons, and I love that as a character actor, and he's really coming into his own. I would not have thought that he would have been like this generation's character actor, but I love that he is so able to go from like just a complete D-bag to like a guy you root for from film to film. Yeah. And like some of those character actors kind of fall into that rhythm where as soon as you see them, as soon as you see Ben Foster, you know it's going to get ugly.
Or like William Fichtner.
Yeah.
Bad guy. Yeah. You know, it's like you see these people and you're like, great character actor, bad guy. Yeah.
But you know exactly what they're there to do, right? But Jesse Plemons, he isn't like that. No. Like he could go either way in a movie. Like you don't know what he's gonna do,
and he's in every movie. Everything, it's great. When I saw him in this, and I went into this movie knowing nothing other than Christian Bale, you know, Western. Like I knew nothing about the cast. I had some surprises that popped up halfway through the movie. I'm like, what? Jesse Plemons is great, and I think that kid. When I saw him on Breaking Bad, was the first time I ever saw him.
Same here. Yep.
Matt Damon.
See, the first time I saw him, to me, it's always he's Landry. From Friday Night Lives.
Right.
It's always Landry. And hey, did you ever watch
Friday? I never watched it.
So. Dude, do yourself a favor. Yeah. This is
the show or the movie?
Well, both are great, but the show is what I'm talking about. Okay. He's in the show.
I haven't seen the show.
Just keep in mind, this is me
telling
you to go watch something about football.
I've heard great things.
Yeah, it is a phenomenal show.
Okay.
And
I know is Tim Riggins.
Tim Riggins, how do you not like Tim Riggins? But he is so good in that show, and he plays just kind of like the doofy best friend, and you just really, and so it's like I always see Landry, like even when he's playing a bad guy, and I don't mean that in like as an insult, like I mean even when he's playing a bad guy, I still kind of see the goodness in him on some level, you know, like and I like that he doesn't always besmirch my memory of Landry by being the guy from Breaking Bad.
That's interesting. No, so I saw him and I'm like, oh wow, he's in this, like he's in everything, no surprise. But that episode of Black Mirror, I know Brad, you've seen it.
Oh yeah.
Do you watch the first episode of this new season?
I haven't got to it yet.
He's so good. Watch the first episode of this new season. So good. It's the longest one they've ever done, but it's based on like a Star Trek type show.
Right. I could tell, but I've seen the still shots. Yeah. As soon as you see the pictures, you know what they're doing.
Yeah. But he was in The Post. He was in American Made. He was in that Black Mirror episode. He was in a movie called The Discovery. I don't know what that one is. Oh, Netflix, like a Netflix movie. But the guy is popping up all over the place. Yeah. So, you know, it was they show the different Indian tribes, and so in the beginning it was Comanche that was that killed the family.
Right.
These Indians are Cheyenne, and so
and the family that the cavalry was killing, their cavalry, right, was Apache.
Okay, so they show a lot of different different tribes in this film, and my history isn't good enough to know the difference, like if there were supposed to be showing like the good ones or the, you know, the bad ones, quote unquote. Like I didn't know
good and bad is subjective. That's
sure.
The whole,
but like Comanche were known more for being more violent.
I think they were from what I understand, and I am far from knowledgeable, but from what I understand, like they were the ones that we tended to have the most brutal battles with.
Okay. Yeah.
I think Cheyenne were more of the peaceful one.
Yeah, I mean, they go out of their way to explain that this chief is, I mean, Christian Bale explains. I mean, we find out,
right.
I mean, he's not good.
Yeah.
Right.
But he explains some of the deeds.
Right.
That,
his hands aren't clean either.
No.
Right.
And they're brutal. And his resistance to, like, you know, when he's told, and it's by Stephen Lang, who is also someone, like, the last time we saw him in a big movie was Avatar.
Right.
Bad guy. So it was interesting to have him sort of like be the guy who's like, yeah, this is it. Enough's enough, and right. we're moving on.
He was Don't Breathe too, right?
Yeah. So he's usually like the heavy or the villain. So it was kind of interesting to have him be like the guy who, you know, again, they kind of cast against type and be the guy, you know, because you're like, oh, he's going to tell him to kill him.
Yeah.
No, he's like, no, you're going to do this.
Right.
I'm telling you, I'm making you, and Bales resists every order that he gives him until he basically, you know, waves his pension check in front of him.
This is a tough scene to watch because you've got a guy that's given his entire life to the army with Christian Bale. He's a captain. He obviously has been following orders and doing a good job with whatever task he's been given. And it comes, you know, it's really funny. It reminded me of Lethal Weapon. You know, I'm getting too old for this. He's about to retire and they send him on this suicide mission. Right. And it's like, it's dangerous. And he's the only man for the job, Stephen Lang says. And yeah, it was really tough because you feel for Christian Bale, like he's done everything right. And now he doesn't want to, I think rightfully so, escort someone who has killed his best friends.
Right.
Peacefully to, you know, go retire and you know, you don't know when he's going to die, but to go retire in Montana. It's like you really feel conflicted for this guy.
And it's interesting because you could look back at moments in history like this and be very judgmental. But the thing is at some point, if you don't say we're just going to stop, it never stops.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like that, you know, like if you think about it, it would be there's another version of American history where it would be very easy for Native Americans to basically have become insurgents and just waging terroristic war indefinitely because they were outraged at what happened to them. And at some point both sides decided that enough was enough. And I don't mean that like, and then it was happily ever after.
No, because the Dakota Pipeline would prove differently.
Right, yeah. And well, if you've ever driven through Indian Territory, when we last year on vacation, we were in the Southwest, and it was like, you would be driving through like Colorado or whatever, and you'd be driving through, and it would be like, oh man, beautiful scenery. It's just lush. And then it would be like, it would just be like somebody drew a line and everything was dead and it was just rock and sand. And you'd be, and then like 20 feet after that line, it'd be like, welcome to Navajo country. Or,
right.
I mean, it was like, and then like you would drive on that for like 3 hours and then you'd see green in the distance. And about 20 feet before it turned back to green, it'd be like now leaving Navajo. It was just like, you know, like it was like obviously picked the crappiest land to give them. And I know that's not a new revelation, but when you see it that starkly of like, there is literally like nature drew a line of this is a hole. And then that's what
here
we
you go.
Them. Yeah. Like it's just like
reparations.
Right. It's like when it's that stark as you're driving through and it's just like bloop. Now it's awful. Yeah. It's yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, so he gets his squad together here. So you get Frenchie, who's Timothy Chalamet. You get Lieutenant Kidder. You get who is Plemons' character, and so he's like the academic. He just graduated from West Point, so he says that they don't see many of his type out there.
Right.
You get his you know, kind of his right hand man. His name is Master Sergeant Metz. And who is that actor?
Is that the guy from Dazed and Confused?
I couldn't. Is that
and CSI Miami?
So that is that Wes? No,
let me see.
That's not him.
No, that's not Wes Studi.
No.
Wes Studi
no.
is the chief.
Is it Adam? No, it's not Adam Beach. That's the son.
He had a very familiar face. I couldn't place it either.
I was thinking, is he looks like the dad from Twilight? But I always confuse those guys. Dazed and Confused.
Yeah,
he's Dazed and Confused.
Yeah.
I always confuse that actor with the dad from Twilight.
Yeah, this guy is similar. Yeah, Dazed and Confused, and also he was on CSI Miami for a long time, and it was this moment I was like, is that? I mean, he's very sunken in. He's got this huge beard, and this guy is done, and he's saying he's done.
He's seen some stuff.
He's done, but he's gonna go one more time because you know his best friend has faith in him, and it's like, well, we're gonna do this, and then we'll be done.
Well, he talks about he's had some mental issues, and I think they took away his gun.
The melancholia, and Christian Bale says, yeah, there's no such thing.
What is that? Depression. Yeah. So
it's PTSD.
So that was before they recognized these things.
It's PTSD.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, that doesn't exist. But so they took away his gun from him. He's a soldier with no gun. He basically doesn't have anything to do. And so Christian Bale picks him to come on this mission to give him, you know,
he gives him his gun back.
Yeah, exactly. And he hands him his gun. And then the last one is Corporal Woodson, who's a black man. And this is post-Civil War. Mm-hmm. So I guess I was a little bit confused where, like, this part of the army, like, how far was it after the Civil War? And there was a black soldier, but there wasn't any problem, and no one seemed to have any issue, like, between the other soldiers.
Yeah, I thought that was a little, like, I don't know how historically accurate that was.
I mean, he's been with him, with Christian Bale, for a long time.
And there was a period post-Civil War during Reconstruction when you were getting, you know, black congressmen and black, like, that was happening, and then the South stopped that from happening. And I don't remember exactly when that came to a close, but there was a period of time when the government was making a concerted effort to try and to get black people into political positions and business owned. They were, you know, they were making an effort because they were like, we need, we can't just release all the slaves and be like, okay, you're on your own. Like, that's like, you know, like, that's not really a good solution either. And so there was a period of time, and that's also part of why the South hated the North even long after the wars, because they felt like the Northerners came in carpetbaggers, that's where that phrase came from, and would come in and basically tell them, like, no, this is what you're going to do, which is why there continues to be such animosity between North and South sometimes.
So. Yeah. But this guy, I mean, we, even though he's not like second in command, it's like he kind of is, because this guy's, he speaks the language and he is like, he is alert.
Yeah.
We see this guy the entire time is like always got Christian Bale's back.
Yeah. Right. And you said, they obviously have a long history.
There's a moment where I thought they were going to go this direction with him being black, because when they do stumble across the woman who's got her kids, her babies, she's still, you know, holding her baby. And he tries to give her a blanket, and she pushes back, but it's because of, you know,
the baby.
Because of it.
That's what I thought, too. That's where I was confused. Yeah. I'm like, are they going to show, because of the time period, I was surprised that they never even broached the subject, and I don't know if that was a conscious decision, if it just, they didn't want to include it with all the other stuff with the Indians going on, or if it was just...
Well, this guy was a soldier, you know, and he was a good one.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
That's what they left.
But so it doesn't come into play just at all.
No.
This is just one long trip. I mean, they have to make it to Montana, and they run into a few different issues. So the first one is this Comanche war party.
The snake people.
Yeah. So they pick up the woman, who's Rosamund Pike.
Yeah.
And she is just distraught. She has all her kids in bed. She's got a blanket over them. Really good. I mean, it's a great performance. I mean, she is just, she's suffering from PTSD herself. She is just like staring off into the
distance. I don't think there's anything post about that trauma.
No,
that's true. That's
no.
just TSD.
Yeah.
She doesn't even want to, I mean, they're like, we should bury this family. There's four, there's a baby, two girls, and a father. Like basically four.
Right.
Her entire family's dead.
And the only reason she's alive is because the baby took the bullet.
Yeah.
Take that, Darren Aronofsky.
And so when they even, like, they attempt to, like, maybe, we'll just dig the graves for you, and she stops them and just tears into the earth, and it's, I mean, that was, she's good.
It was haunting.
She's good in this.
She is. She is really good. So I think it was a great performance, and I felt so bad throughout the film because she just keeps getting dropped into terrible situations.
Oh,
and it's like, as if this isn't bad enough, you know, I mentioned PTSD, because then when the Comanches come back, it's like, oh my gosh, you just suffered your entire family being murdered. Mm-hmm. Now they're back.
Yeah.
And then, you know, she goes on to be abducted again, and you're like, oh my
God. Well, the people that are there to save her have two Indians in tow.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it's interesting. So the first run-in with the snake people, this tribe, we see them, like, we see, you know, the tribe that they're carrying back home. They engage with them. Like, they help take them out. And even though they're shackled and chained, and
that
Christian
was a
Bale,
great scene.
Like, we even see, like, he's, you know, because the chief had said, you know,
unchain us and we will help you.
We will help. And he
we should mention, so because of Christian Bale's hate of this chief and the fact that he saw his friends die next to him, on the battlefield at his hands, he, as soon as they get outside of town,
like over the hill,
he's like, stop,
parade's
over. And he gets the chief down, and at first I guess he gives him a knife because he wants to fight him, like, we're gonna settle this right now, is how I took it. He gave him a knife, Christian Bale had a knife, and the chief doesn't play along at all. He says he doesn't fear death, and Christian Bale puts him and his son in chains, and the women, he says, take their braids out. I guess he doesn't, just to kind of demean,
I think
that's
part of their I think that's part of their
culture. He just a demeaning thing, like take their braids out, and you know, so he chains them up, and they basically say, we're being hunted. Once they find Rosamund Pike, they say, they're not gone, they're gonna track us, and they're gonna kill us all. Take us out of these chains and we'll help. We need to fight as one. And Christian Bale is having none of it. And then this big fight goes down, and it was awesome. I mean, the guy, one of the guys in chains, he's
using
the guy.
His chains to choke the guy. Yeah.
Great action.
While
scene.
On a horse.
While on a
it
horse.
Was great.
Yeah. 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 So these two, it's the chief and his son, they are, you know, just tearing it up and helping them out a lot. And so the next time when at nightfall, you know, after this whole thing goes down, he talks to him again and says, if we want to survive, we need to fight as one. And this whole time, the chief, you can see that the chief has grown. I don't know if it's because his days are numbered or
just he's cancer.
Yeah.
So he's dying.
He's also had 7 years in a jail cell to be thinking about things, I guess. But you can tell that this character has grown to where he is. He's over the, you know, Cowboys versus Indian thing. Like, he is ready to move on and to help them and just move past the terrible
history.
He wants
to go home and die.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Christian Bale obviously still has, you know, a lot of, you know, a lot of anger and a lot of hostility built up against him. And so, but he eventually concedes and says, and realizes, yes, they're going to kill us. They took out Frenchie.
It was still a while before he took him out of the chains, though, wasn't it?
It was, like, I think it was after that.
It was after, but was it immediately after that? I felt like they were still, it was still a little bit before he totally trusted them.
Yeah.
Because I was kind of, I remember being like, you would think
he didn't like immediately.
He didn't immediately,
but
it was after that.
Right.
But that night after the fight, he talks to him. He goes up to him, and Christian Bale is always, very, you know, what do you want? Like, he's very short with them, but he talks to him, and that's when he says the thing about fighting as one. And and then he calls Jesse Plemons over, and he says, take them out of the chains. And Jesse Plemons is like, what? You know, and then he says, you know, if they try anything, shoot them. But you know, he realizes that these guys are going to come back, and they killed Frenchie. I think they look at his dead body, like hanging over a horse or something. He's like, we're all going to end up like that if you don't, if we don't fight as one. So they realize that, you know, they need to. And so he reluctantly lets them out. And then eventually, what's his name is on the night watch.
The guy who is definitely done.
Yeah, Metz.
You know, he's not fully engaged.
Yeah, his buddy. So I think he takes. Is this the time where he takes over for Plemons? Plemons is on watch, and he's like, "All right, you can go." And Plemons has another great scene with Plemons talking about how he's never killed a man. You know, and what does it feel like? Do you remember your first time? And Metz is like, it was so long ago.
I
don't
14.
Even, yeah, and he's numb. He doesn't. He says it all. Just, you know, doesn't feel like anything after a while.
Yeah.
And so, he takes the night watch, and he falls asleep.
Sure does.
And this was so great. I didn't realize what happened. I turned to Brad because I didn't understand it at first. You see them all at the campfire, and the chief and his son are just, like, staring at them. And at first, I'm like, what are they doing? What are they? Why are they watching them so carefully? I thought they were going to escape or something over the night.
No.
But so you see Metz, and he's smoking a cigar or something, and I guess he falls asleep. And then they wake up the next morning. Everyone's still there. Mm-hmm. Nothing has changed.
Yeah.
They get on their horses, they go, and then they come across all the Comanche dead, and the one, the leader with the red face paint and the black lines in it, hanging.
Yeah, like they are no longer
a problem.
They're not the enemy in the movie. We find out, like, okay, well, they're not the heavy because they're done.
And I thought the whole time was going to be like cat and mouse with those Comanche, with the snakes, the
snake people,
the snake people, and their group, and so they're taken out, and so. I'm like, at first, I'm like, who did this? Like, I'm like, is there another tribe that now is even bigger and badder, and that's what they're trying to show. And then Christian Bale goes and talks to Metz and says, if you ever fall asleep, I don't like to be humiliated if you ever fall asleep. And then I'm like, wait a minute. Those two guys, the old chief and his son, took out that entire group while they were sleeping and then came back together.
And it's funny because, like, we don't see what they did, but obviously, I mean, and these are the, like, we could say they're the bad guys.
Right.
Yeah. But they're like, I mean, one guy's gutted, his entrails are hanging out. I mean, they wiped these guys out.
They tore it up. Two guys, one being an old man dying of cancer.
Uh-huh.
That's right. Those guys are badasses. Like, that was amazing. So I thought that was so cool how they did that without showing it, but you completely understand how tough they are and how great of warriors they are. Yeah. Like,
And then we see Rosamund Pike jump off her horse and basically unload her weapon in one of the bodies.
Yeah. Taking out a little anger, this little counseling, medicine
just be
there.
Sure.
Yeah,
I was like, how many bullets do you guys have? Like, should you be putting all six in an already dead guy? Like, I understand, but
that was at the first battle, though, right? Before they found them all dead at the tree?
Well, it was from the big battle,
you're right.
That's a little Wild West therapy right there is what we call that.
Wild West, yeah.
So I should mention
they are no longer the threat.
Yeah, exactly. And so they go to a camp that's, I guess, in between, and Christian Bale meets a general or the head of the camp that he knows.
Yeah.
It's a fort along the way, and they're going to drop off Rosamund Pike there. And then they go to dinner, and we see that, like, the captain, his or whoever that is, the head, his wife is.
He might be a general.
Is he a general? Okay. His wife is talking about how badly they treat the Indians, and he's like, "All right, that's enough." And she's like, "Well,
hippie." and it's tough because we do see that is true. Part of what she's saying is true, but at the same time, we also saw what happened to Rosamund Pike's family,
right?
And that they both are just sitting there, you know, Christian Bale and Rosamund Pike are just letting this woman go on and on. And obviously they're trying to be respectful of their host, but at the same time, you're like, lady, you aren't fully informed.
Right. Yeah.
Especially what this woman just went through.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, and then, you know, finally her husband's like, all right, that's enough. And he says, let's go have a smoke in the cigar in the lounge. So he talks to him and this guy, again, Christian Bale is like, you know, a couple days away from retirement. And this guy's like, yeah, we need you to bring a dangerous prisoner to be executed on your route. And I'm like, come on, what? This is not good news. And
just add that to your to-do list.
And he agrees, you know, and I think the other thing is, too, that Christian Bale, I mean, this is all he knows as a soldier. Like, I think he accepts it because he's like, what else? Like, this is what I do. I enjoy it, and I'm about to be retired. So, you know what? Why not? Why not do what I'm good at?
Right. And one more for old times'
exactly.
sake.
Exactly. And so, out of nowhere is Ben Foster, which, again, didn't know he was in this movie.
Yeah,
I'm
I didn't
like,
either.
Ben Foster? Like, that's kind of a big... He's a big actor to be just kind of coming in halfway through the movie in this little role. So obviously, you know, something important is going to go on. So he apparently, I don't remember the full story, but he murdered one of his men I didn't take it as that he did something to like one of the tribes. I thought that he murdered one of his own people.
Tell though, because he kept defending his actions by saying that, like, well, I haven't done anything you didn't do.
Yeah.
You know.
But then Christian Bale answers, well, I was doing my job, or I was doing what was ordered. Like, I feel like he was trying to get at him, but still Ben Foster's crimes were worse because his was like cold blooded murder. Did you pick up on exactly what
Ben Foster?
Yeah.
Yeah. He attacked a bunch of prostitutes at a whorehouse.
Oh.
Oh,
okay,
I totally
so
missed
no,
that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We couldn't figure out what he did.
No,
he murdered someone.
Yeah. He was, I mean, it's similar to, and that actually made me kind of felt like a callback to Unforgiven.
Okay.
Because it was the same thing that happened in that.
Right.
It's like, no, these were defenseless. These weren't soldiers. He didn't go on like a, he kind of went on a knife spree at a whorehouse.
So we're to believe that he just got like drunk at a whorehouse and started.
Yeah.
Carving people up?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That definitely makes his character
so
less likable.
You know, like on the surface, if you take like what his physical actions are and very similar to what Christian Bale did, but Christian Bale was doing it, you know, it was his job.
Right.
This guy just got drunk and started hacking away.
Okay.
prostitutes because they were, you know, subhuman.
Yeah, and I got that from the Christian Bale interaction because you knew that whatever Ben Foster did was just plain murder, where Christian Bale, we find out, and see, I thought there was going to be some weird twist type reveal where Christian Bale was in on some kind of, I don't know if you'd say illegal activity, but I thought that he had a secret that he was keeping.
Yeah.
But come to find out, basically, Christian Bale, when he was fighting the Indians alongside his, you know, fallen brothers, he took care of business, maybe not in the most civilized way. He didn't just shoot them. He gutted them. Mm-hmm. And so that was not...
Well, and they used to, I mean, they used to, the reason they were scalping people, they would pay you for the scalps. That's how you proved you killed an Indian. They didn't want you bringing the whole body back. That was a lot of work. Just bring the head, just bring the scalp back.
Yeah.
And you'd get paid for that.
Gotcha. So, I mean, what Christian Bale and him end up talking about in a later scene is that, you know, Ben Foster's justifying his actions and saying, it could easily be you here chained up. And Christian Bale's like, no, it's not the same thing, you know?
And yeah. And I mean, that's the reason why he's chained up. There's like, this guy is dangerous. Like he's gone outside the scope of what their
jobs. Level of
brutality.
Right. Yeah. It's a bridge too far.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But you know, as soon as you see Ben Foster, you're like, crap.
Yes. That's not gonna
exactly. And they you don't bring in someone like Ben Foster halfway through a movie to have him just be the
do a musical
package
number.
Like deliver him here go, see ya.
Hey, buddy. Well, you are allowed to put your thing in a prostitute, not if that thing is a knife.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah,
exactly. So they do a couple of trade-offs here. So they obviously lost Frenchie. They bury him. Corporal Woodson was shot in the shoulder during the run-in with the Comanche. So he was hanging on, you know, by a thread. And before they leave, Christian Bale goes to visit him. And that's where we get a little bit more of their history. We understand they fought together for a long time. And he... obviously Christian Bale cares about him. He's very dear to him. And he drops him off. I guess, was it a letter or money? I wasn't sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think he was trying to just relay his, you know, what he ends up having to say, you know, just, you know, that they're very close.
Yeah. So that's what I thought. Maybe
it was a really emotional scene and maybe he was trying to avoid, you know,
he was trying to avoid it, you know, and we see he's just a few steps behind his buddy who's kind of a husk and not all there anymore. And you can see Christian Bale is a guy who's like trying to stay ahead of that.
Yeah.
He sees what could happen to him. And so he's just trying to like skirt the emotion and move away from it, which is why it's like, he's going to leave this here and he's going to walk out and the guy wakes up. And it's a good scene.
Yeah, definitely. So they pick up a couple of other people to replace the guys that they lost, and they move forward with Ben Foster. So continue on their journey. Rosamund Pike, she's like, she was given an invitation to stay at that fort, but they said the next train doesn't come until Christmas. Mm-hmm. And the wife of that general was like, oh, I'm sure we'll find.
Is it the Polar Express?
Yeah. Because the stagecoach isn't coming.
Yeah, I guess. And is that because of the danger of the territory? They stopped running because they said the coaches couldn't.
I didn't get that, or was it just complacency?
It's also probably supply and demand. They probably just don't have enough reason to run the train there.
Right. It's just like how we really don't need to keep these people as prisoners anymore. They're just trying to get rid of that.
Yeah. So they invite her, you know, the wife of the general says, I'm sure we can find plenty to keep you busy. And she's like, okay. She has nothing there and nobody anymore. And so she tells Christian Bale's character, like, you're the only person that I want to be with. Like, you know, I would like to come with you. I know I'm an inconvenience. And he says, saddle up a horse for her and lets her come along, where I'm just like, oh, you know, that's never good news. Like she's not going to have a, you know, happy journey along for the ride. I'm like, oh, this poor woman's in for some terrible situations. But they go along and they're stopped. They eat dinner, and then Rosamund Pike goes with the
wives.
Yeah, the wives to go clean the dishes after dinner.
And the child.
Yeah, yeah. And Christian Bale says, you don't have to do that. Or, you know, they can do that just as good as anyone. And she's like, and I'm perfectly capable. Like, she's very strong-headed. Like, and you kind of got to let her do whatever she needs to do because she's obviously getting over some stuff.
Yeah.
She's still not okay. So they go to do that, and three fur traders stumble upon them.
Yeah.
And it's bad news. So she is now abducted. Along with the wives, and the child gets away mm-hmm. and starts yelling to his father and his grandfather and says that she's gone. So now they've got to go on this adventure to go get the women back. And, you know, I would, you just,
and these guys are bad too.
Yeah. I was trying to figure out what their end game was with these women. Like, why did they abduct the women?
Concubines?
Yeah.
Slavery?
Yeah. I mean, obviously they're not running into a lot
they're
of women
traders.
Out there.
They're fur traders in both senses of the word.
Okay. So that's why, they were,
that's, yeah. That's the way I took it too.
Okay. So they, yeah.
So
they
you
were,
agree with me.
Yes.
That they're,
I think they deal in any
okay.
trade.
Okay.
And they probably don't see a lot of women, and so
I wasn't sure right. if it was for personal reasons or for trading reasons.
Both.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah. And I also couldn't figure out, because of the trauma they had been through, were the women just roughed up or did
I think the assumption was there was probably some test driving.
Yeah, ugh, awful. So they're in this terrible situation, and all the soldiers are on the hill, like trying to figure out how to best go get them. And I think Christian Bale is going to go take someone down to go save them. And the chief is like, "Nope, that's my daughter. I am going to go lead this, and that's my last word on it."
Yeah.
And this is the first point where you really see, I mean, after all that they've been through, Christian Bale is starting to kind of change a little bit, because he doesn't fight with it, and especially considering the circumstances, he just lets him do it. And so in the past, it's always been
frontier justice.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally what it is.
Yes.
Yes. You know,
absolutely. So, you know, and this is a scene where they don't show what's happening, but they end up sneaking into the tents, and you know that someone's going to get taken out here. And, you know, I was worried that it would be one of the main characters, but it ends up being one of the, you know, one of the extra guys they picked up.
The red shirt.
Yeah, exactly. So all the traitors are killed. The red shirt, you know, tag along is killed. But everybody else makes it out all right. Mm-hmm. And so they continue on their journey. You know, and it's a lot. Again, there's a lot of really good interactions and a lot of good facial expression. I mean, a lot of emotions with very few words. And so the movie's kind of quiet and kind of slow, but I wouldn't say it never got boring for me. Like,
not plotting.
No, I really enjoyed it, but it's not an action-packed movie. Like, when there's about like three big fights in it, and they're very well done. But this movie is not a shoot 'em up type of Western. Like, so do not go into it expecting just nonstop action. It's.
I wish it was a little more like that. I wish it told the same story, but had a little bit more energy to it.
Yeah, and it's not. And it's not that. I thought it was interesting is after the scene when they get back, you know, everybody's kind of, oof.
Raul Julia.
Yeah, everybody's trying to, like, just come down, and we see Rosamund Pike kind of sitting in her tent just decompressing, and that's when we get Ben Foster, like, sort of lecturing Christian Bale, and then they cut to Rosamund Pike, and she hears everything that's being said. So she understands, like, Christian Bale's, like, not a good guy.
Right.
You know, or not in the sense of like what she's, you know, the brutality she's been experiencing firsthand. So I thought it was interesting because it was like, you know, you think this is going to like kind of drive a wedge between them. But
also where I thought there was going to be some kind of a deeper, darker twist going on. Because when Ben Foster has this conversation with him and he says that it could, you know, he could easily be up on this tree and chains.
Yeah, it could be you strapped to that tree.
Yeah, and I can't remember. I think that was maybe in a scene before, but like I thought that was going. We were going to get like, oh, what did Christian Bale do that we don't know about? And this guy, like, he has to keep. The thing is, like, he can't let other people find out what happened. But really, all it comes down to is it's just showing that, you know, Foster's a real bad guy. Mm-hmm. Christian Bale is not a bad guy, but he also isn't exactly.
He's a publicly supported bad guy.
He's done some things that are not necessarily the best way to handle them, but also he's still doing the work of the army. Like, he's not going off on his own. Just
he's doing the job.
He's doing the job, and his hands are still dirty.
Yeah.
But he's
and that's, I mean, doing the job has historically, well, we've heard that.
Yeah,
it's been to sort of pacify horrible, horrible, horrible atrocities.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, it's sort of the pass.
Yeah.
Doing the job.
So this is where we get, it's raining. Rosamund Pike invites Christian Bale into the tent. So obviously she wasn't.
Yeah.
Too.
No. She basically, like, it, you know, she accepts it.
Yeah. And
well, and it's, but also of that era, you know, I always look at things.
It's the era.
Yeah. Right. It's like, the time. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, when people, I always get frustrated when people try to apply modern day morals to people from different eras.
Right.
It's like, you know, it's like, I'm really happy all those guys stormed the beach at Normandy, but none of them supported gay marriage. I'll tell you that. And so if we start creating these litmus tests for people that are that far in the past, like you're always going to be repulsed.
Right.
And we have to at some point accept that hopefully each generation moves the ball forward towards fairness, but no generation is going to be perfect.
Yeah. And what we see, it's like the reason Bale is able to, you know, sort of get this pass from her is that we see he's nothing but decent to her. And so she hears, she understands, you know, what has happened, but she accepts it's like that was what he was assigned to do.
Right.
And, yeah, she invites him in. I was happy that they didn't make this some sort of
big romance.
Romantic.
Yeah.
Not overly. Right. That's where I was starting wondering.
I was like, oh, God, no.
I started thinking about the time because we see day and night. And I don't know how much time actually passed, but with all the things that she's been through and to be like cuddling with him in a tent now, I'm like, don't go that way.
And I feel
like marriages back then were a lot more like that. They were very, they were utilitarian and they were
functional.
Right. And they were agreements. Yeah. They were contractual and they're like, you know, and it was, you know, well, and then I'm going to take care of the home and you're going to go out and farm or hunt or whatever. But it wasn't as much I'm in love with you as it is, we can function well together.
Yeah. But we can see that they're both, I mean, so they restrain from, you know, getting too melodramatic.
Right.
They do some cuddling.
Yeah.
That's it. And I'm glad.
I mean,
they
look like people who are reaching out just because they're both honestly
both
in pain.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
In just different ways. Unfortunately, you know, that big rain spells problems for us, but
So obviously, you know, Ben Foster is up to no good when he starts coughing and choking. He's been tied up under a tree with no shelter in this big downpour, and Jesse Plemons brings him a cup of hot water. He says the captain doesn't want you to freeze to death, and he's just like choking and coughing. And so Plemons says, okay, I'll go get the key. I'll, you know, and he unchains him.
Oh, Landry.
Damn it.
And, damn it. So naive.
That's where I learned not to get attached to anybody in this movie.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Everybody.
Oh, this one really hurt because, you know, he seemed like a good guy and you're rooting for him and hoping you would make it to the end. But Ben Foster is able to wrestle him to the ground and he scratches his way up to the gun and turns around and puts one in his head.
Yeah. It's a very sort of brutal, desperate fight too.
Yeah,
it's not
clawing at the ground.
Yeah,
trying to get away.
There's nothing about it that feels like a staged action fight. It's just a very like, ooh.
They don't cut away.
Nope.
It is. I mean, it's a little bit further away. It's not a close up type thing. You see the whole landscape. You see a hill, and they're kind of down in a ditch, and they're tumbling one on top of the other, punching. And Ben Foster is clawing his way up, and he gets to that gun, and just like it's just turns around again, no cuts, turns around, boom.
Shoot.
Puts one in his head. You can see that Plemons isn't moving, and Ben Foster gets away. He steals one of the horses. That wakes up Christian Bale, and he runs out to see what's going on. And this was after, we should mention, because I think it's important, his buddy, you know, his buddy basically tells him right before they go to bed, he's like, I'm done. I'm starting to, he can't feel things, and obviously his mind and body is going to waste, and
he's just wearing a shirt and pants, and it's a downpour,
and
it's freezing,
and it's cold, and he says, I don't feel anything, so
his
last thing that he does before he rides off is he goes to the chief, and he says, I'm sorry for your treatment, and I think that's probably where they're trying to make a statement here, that's part of the statement this film is making, but it's a good scene where he opens up, he's calling out the chief, at first I'm like, is he going to try to kill, like, I thought that because of the crimes or the battles mm-hmm. where Christian Bale and his friends on the battlefield were killed. I'm like, since he's done, is he going to try to go kill right. the chief? No. But no, what he does is he gives him a gift. He apologizes and gives him tobacco.
Yeah.
And says, sorry for the treatment of your people and mm-hmm. forgive us.
Yeah.
And so they wake up after the gunshot and Foster rides off, and then Christian Bale tells everybody that he's going to go get him.
And he gets a shot off it. Like he gets hit. He hits.
Does he? I couldn't tell.
He hits him.
It's
oh,
so
yeah.
dark
he hits him right in the back.
Does he? Okay.
And he knows. He's like, I got him. He's going
to
bleed out.
Yeah. He doesn't want anyone else to go after him. He's like, I've already lost good men.
Yeah.
But his buddy rides off, you know, he rides off. He still doesn't have a coat on or anything, but he grabs a horse and goes off after him.
Yeah.
And so after the rain is over, they go and they find both the men. Ben Foster has been shot multiple times, but his friend is also sitting under a tree with a bullet wound in his head and a gun down by his side. So he did the job. He took out Ben Foster, but he also ended his life because he knew that it was coming to an end. I mean, whether he had control or not. And another really emotional scene. I mean, this is where Christian Bale just has a breakdown. Mm-hmm. He is, you know, he takes it. It's rough. And, you know, I mean, the guy can act.
Yeah. It's a pretty effective scene. And we, you know, I think it's also at this point where like, you know, like Wes Studi and the Indians also see that, you know, Christian Bale is also, you know, everything that he's done horrible to them, but in turn, you know, they understand like
it's taking a toll.
Yeah.
And it's a really good scene. And so we're losing more and more soldiers along the way. You know, we started off with, you know, four or five of them, two die, they get replaced. Then another one of those dies. Then his second in command here dies, and Plemons dies at the hands of Foster. Foster's dead now, so our group is getting very small at this point.
Yeah, basically now we got like rando mustache guy.
Yeah,
I was like, who's left? Oh, yeah,
we have the one new
mustache guy.
Yeah.
Who at first I was like, oh, is he in cahoots with Foster? And they kind of set that up,
right?
Because they give him a couple looks where you're like, oh man, he's gonna let him go, but that doesn't happen.
Yeah, exactly. I thought there was going to be some kind of escape, you know, in the midst.
Nope.
But again, that's why I said at the beginning, like, this is kind of a simple story. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's effective and it's telling an important history lesson, but it's not a convoluted, complex story. There's not a lot of twists and turns. Nope. There wasn't a twist with Bale like I thought. There wasn't an escape for Foster. Like, the movie really is just point A to point B and the characters having to grow along the way, and they get into a few scuffles.
It subverts expectations, but not in a big like showy head fake,
right?
You know, it's not like
no.
You know, it's like they don't even set it up like that. You just kind of anticipate things that just you're like, oh
yeah, it's an effective story, but it's still simple. It's point A to point get from point A to point B.
It's a very quiet movie.
It is, absolutely. And there's, I mean, there's not even much of a score. Like, I mean, it literally is a quiet movie. I noticed throughout most of the film, there is no music in the background. Yeah. It is just talking, and when they're not talking, it's just looking at faces, you know? And
it's weird to take a movie that opens with the brutal murder of two children and an infant and be like, it's a quiet film.
It is. Right? I know. It's what's,
Yeah.
It, I mean, at this point, to your point, there's really who's left.
You know,
you start taking like a mental head count of like, well, who is left here?
Yeah.
So
for
it's
now.
We're
about to winnow it down a little further.
So Christian Bale, along with Rosamund Pike, along with the chief, his son, the wives, and the child. Mm-hmm. And
did you recognize the son?
No. What's he from?
Joe Dirt. He's been in lots of other things.
Really?
You're right.
He's the Indian. He's the Indian friend at the fireworks stand in Joe Dirt.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Really?
Whisker do's, whisker don'ts.
Oh, that's funny. I thought he was really good. I thought both the chief and his son, like, they were really good.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
again, there's not much speaking going on. They do speak in the native language a little bit with just subtitles. But again, just the emotion, you can tell what they've been through these 7 years in jail. Like, there's so much to say through their facial expressions.
Yeah.
And I think those two actors did phenomenal. The others are good too, like the women, but like they don't have much of a, they, you know, she the one daughter gives Rosamund Pike an outfit, which is a good scene, but
they don't have
there's not much of a part.
Those
two are fantastic though. And
he was also in a HBO production version of Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee.
Yeah,
it was really good.
Yes.
Interesting. So it's that crew along with random mustache soldier that they picked up at the fort, mm-hmm. and they finally get to Montana. The chief is on his last leg.
He's not gonna make it.
Yeah, and so Christian Bale has a good conversation with him, and this is where they really both come to terms with everything in the past and being able to put it behind them. Christian Bale goes to him and says the names of all the people that died mm-hmm. in his fight. But
my friend.
But at the end, he says, I've lost a lot of people and you have too, and mm-hmm. it's hard for both of us. Really good scene
yeah.
between the two of them, and yeah. they have an understanding. You know, mm-hmm. it's very quiet again, but he says, can you make it the rest of the way? And we know that he's, you know, going to die very mm-hmm. shortly. So they get to the final burial ground. He has passed away. Mm-hmm. They build, they have a ceremony. Obviously the tribe has their ceremony they do.
Yeah. You think it's wrap it up.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he's about to be buried. And then we see four people riding over the hill. And, Christian Bale goes to get his little letter from the president. Mm-hmm. you know, of course that should be effective.
Anybody stops you, you just show them this.
Yeah.
And they will leave you alone.
Yeah, that's in the beginning. So yeah, you know that's gonna work out well.
Not so in Montana.
Yeah. And so
shocking.
So the four of them right over the hill. Is this the guy from Walking Dead?
Yeah.
Okay.
Herschel.
Yeah. I was thinking that was him. Yeah. He rides up with his three
sons. And of course, we're like, yay, Herschel.
Yeah. Yeah,
right. Oh.
I haven't seen him in a while. He rides over the hill with his three sons. They're all dressed in black, which I think is very symbolic. Yeah. You can tell these guys are going to be bad.
Great.
He says, what are you doing on my land? I want you to get off the land. Take all these people, take the dead Indian, get them out of here. And Christian Bale shows him the letter. He says, I have a letter from the president. And
is there a sign on my garage that says dead engine burial?
Yeah.
And, he...
Dan doesn't even know what to do with that joke.
Yeah, I just gotta let that go. Yeah.
And he says, I don't care.
I don't know. I don't need to hear how good my coffee is.
He, I buy it.
Herschel, he says, I don't care. No word, no letter from the president mm-hmm. can tell me what to do with my land. So they're all cocking their guns at this point, and they say, you get them off the land now or else, you know, we're going to have trouble. And Christian Bale, again, with the body language.
Just turns his back on him. You can tell he's just resigned to like, God damn it.
Yeah. And, you know, they're so close. And so I was surprised at this one because he has a gun that's tucked in his waistband mm-hmm. and he turns around and so people
show it to
clearly
him.
See the gun mm-hmm. and he takes it out and he holds it at his side. And I'm like, oh, he's going to get shot down. Like, I mean, he pulls his gun, but they don't do anything yet. So these guys obviously are not as intimidating as they want you to think. They don't just immediately gun them down. But then Rosamund Pike comes from.
They're still gunning down a military officer. Like they, they got to know
exactly
if they shoot him. Even if it's still gonna be
a problem.
It's gonna be a problem.
Exactly. Yeah,
I mean, it's pretty brazen because you're like, aside from the presidential order.
Yeah, he has a presidential order,
but they're so far away.
Yeah.
It's like. You can tell that they're like, how enforceable is this?
Right. I don't know I never saw him. You know, like, really? Who's going to tell what happened? So Rosamund Pike comes and kind of flanks them, and she pulls a rifle on them, and Herschel.
I love this part.
Yeah, he's like, you're not going to shoot me, and kind of pulls one of those head fakes where I think at the end of Magnificent Seven, remember, it was the same thing where he tries to give the long-winded speech,
right.
and then all of a sudden gets shot. Well, he's just like, you're not going to shoot me, and boom, just instantly right. shoots him, and then they all start firing, and this is a tough scene because all these people that we've come to, you know, appreciate all these characters that have made it from the very beginning.
Yeah.
All the Indians. I mean,
people are dropping.
Everyone dies except for Christian Bale, Rosamund Pike, and the young Indian.
And, well, one of the suds for a moment.
Oh, true. Yeah. So three of the new hostile landowners are dead, but one of them kind of escapes and starts running away through the field, and Christian Bale just picks up his gun, shoots him in the leg, I think, and he falls over. So wounds him, doesn't kill him, and then goes and finishes the job.
Yeah.
With a knife.
With a knife. And it's interesting because it's like he, in turn, has like become exactly what the movie opened with.
Right. Yeah.
With shooting a guy in the back, going over.
I thought he was going to scalp him, but he didn't.
You think he's going to scalp him too. He does it, but what he does is just as
he knifes him in the back like many times. Yeah. It's very brutal. But I thought because of killing his friends, the Indians, I thought he was going to kind of honor them by doing his
It is exactly what I mean. The name of the movie,
It was effective. So and that's kind of how it wraps up. It flashes forward. They're at a train station.
I say you get the final scene at the train station where she's getting on the train with the young Indian boy.
Obviously, she's taking him on. And I also thought, well, that's nice. I knew this is where it was going. Once they all died, I'm like, okay, so she's got a family now.
Yeah, because they actually honor the rest of the tribe by giving them the same burial that the chief had.
Give him the ceremony. You know. And then, he's dressed up and about to get on the train with Rosamund Pike. And so it's like, okay, that's nice. He has no family, but he has her, and her family was killed. So both their families were killed in the same kind of manner. But now they have a new family.
Wouldn't the boy still have family back home, though? That's where I was questioning where back home is.
Hard to say.
Where are they? Because they've been pushed off and scattered. So even though this is their land, as we can see, and somebody took it over.
There's also a movement in this period of we should let white people raise Indians and that will civilize them. That's what Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee is about. And so there was definitely a mentality of they'll be better off in the white world.
Right.
So we should we're doing them a favor. So
It's Rosamund Pike is. That's not her motivation. They don't show it.
Right.
She's basically, I think they bonded over that.
I think this goes back to where I was talking about, with viewing through historical prisms. Like the people that felt that way thought they were doing the right thing. They weren't pulling Indians from their homes.
Yeah.
They felt this will be better for them.
Oh, it's different than the missions in the jungle.
Yeah, I mean, so it's so while we can look back and say that was not a good thing, I don't think their motivation was at its core positive.
Yeah,
even if their actions weren't.
Yeah, it's just white arrogance. But
yeah, it's exactly what it was. But they weren't we need to hurt Indians. They were this will help them.
Sure.
Because the thought process was, if we can make them more white, quote unquote, then we'll all get along better.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it's and we're going to teach them to read and hold jobs. And that's in their mind, this is a good thing.
Yeah.
We are elevating them as a race.
Yeah.
And but they weren't trying to do damage. I don't feel.
Yeah. And I didn't think she was either.
I don't think she was either. Yeah.
This is coming from definitely a more emotional place through the bond they built over this journey.
Right.
They don't sell it at all as that she's trying to just be the,
I don't think they are, but when we're talking about why would they let this happen? I think that's why.
Yeah.
I think it was cuz a white lady wanted an Indian.
Yeah. And also
okay.
who's going to speak on his behalf?
Right.
Sure. Right. Yeah. And so, at this point, when you think when they're going to part ways, I'm like, what does Christian Bale have? Now he's retired. He has nothing to do. They've obviously bonded. He had some kind of connection with this woman. I'm like, where's he going?
Montana. That's the plan, I guess.
Yeah. And so.
But there's this long moment that they hold where he's like, do I stay? Do I go? And he turns around and he looks at the train. And because she invites him along. Yeah. And he's just like, nah. And then, I don't know. I like this moment. It's a smart enough movie that I feel like it's intentional. But he's looking at the train, and did you see what's going on behind him?
No.
When he's looking at the train, a car drives by.
Oh yeah,
a era appropriate car. Actually, it's probably not. I don't think cars really came around for another 2 or 3 years because it's 1892. Maybe it's 1893. Right. But still, a car drives by, and I kind of took it as your world's over,
right?
Like this is what's coming. This is the modern world, and we're done killing Indians.
You're out of place,
and if you don't get on this train, it's not
going to
be pretty.
Well, they're going to Chicago though. So
they're going to Chicago, which is industrialization is going to take over.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
at this point. He's going to be by himself.
It's kind of like the Wild Bunch.
And it dawns on him that he will be by himself.
So he decides the last minute to jump on the back of the train And then did you guys stay for after the credits? He gets arrested for not having a ticket.
Yeah, thrown out by
like
Harrison
the commuter.
Ford.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
No ticket. Somebody offers no him ticket. A bag of money. And yeah,
that's the first place my head goes to when he jumps on the train. I'm like, he didn't buy a ticket for that train.
I think you can buy a ticket when you're on the train.
Daniel, that's
I think back then
I hope.
Could, yeah.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes more sense. Thanks. I'm like,
yeah.
Do you think
it's easier to sell a ticket to stop a train?
Yeah.
Totally. Like, if you got the money, they'll take it.
Yeah.
But it's a little slow, but overall, I liked it.
Yeah,
I thought it was good.
I did too, because again, it's been a long time since we got a good Western.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed Magnificent Seven for what it was, but it wasn't.
It's not the same thing. It's a Hollywood Western. Exactly. So this is
fun, but like this was more original.
A grown up Western.
Yeah. I know that if you've seen Westerns, it does borrow a lot from different things.
Oh,
but,
yeah, sure.
But yeah, I really enjoyed it.
That's kind of what I like about Westerns is watching people borrow other elements and reassemble them to tell a new story.
Yeah.
And when it works, I like that aspect of a Western.
Yeah.
So. And I think it did in this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Dan, do you have a video recovery for us?
Yeah. Not totally the same kind of Western, but there's a 1982 movie that this kind of made me think of a little bit. Starring Willie Nelson and Gary Busey, called Barbarossa. And it was a big cult movie, especially on cable at the time. I think it was on Showtime, like nonstop.
I remember it being on cable a lot. I don't think I've ever actually seen it.
It's a fan. It's an like, hour and 29 minutes, hour 30 minutes. It's fantastic. It's one of those movies that's like Willie Nelson plays this sort of legendary, almost mythical bandit named Barbarossa, Redbeard, who is constantly being hunted by this Mexican family, and we're never really quite sure why. And the movie slowly reveals why, and they always send somebody out to kill him, and he's killed like seven of their men because they keep trying to get him, and he's just better. And then Gary Busey is this sort of like farm boy who is on the run because he accidentally killed a man, and he didn't even kill him with a gun; he like hit him with a stick, but he killed like his brother-in-law. And so the father is trying to, is wanting to kill him, and these two kind of join up. And so you've got this very experienced, almost mythical, he's a bandit.
Right.
And then you got Gary Busey, who's just barely knows how to handle a gun, and how they slowly form a team. It's a quiet and kind of an odd movie. It's not your traditional Western, but it is kind of fun to watch. You forget how good Gary Busey was.
Yeah.
He's really good at this. Willie Nelson's
especially
fantastic.
Pre-motorcycle wreck.
Yes. Yeah. I mean,
he was on pace to be.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
A
I mean, this is
actor.
Post, you know, it's post Buddy Holly story,
right.
But he's really, really good in this. It's a really fun movie. And, it's sort of about mythology and about legends and how Willie Nelson knows he has to kind of perpetuate his myth and legend. It kind of helps his, he doesn't
his
even
brand.
Have to. Yeah, it's like he doesn't even have to like really do much to like hold people up or rob them
because they're like, oh, you're that guy.
Here you go.
Yeah,
and it's if you get a chance to see it, it's really a lot of fun, and it's one of those ones. It was like it's in his own way kind of a revisionist Western.
Sure.
Because it's not really about good guys and bad guys.
Right.
But it's one of those movies that, it's more about the myth making and Westerns.
Yeah.
That makes it so fun.
Awesome.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, it's worth it.
Cool. Well, thank you, Dan.
Did Willie Nelson do a lot of acting?
He did.
He had a period of it.
I didn't realize he was an actor.
Yeah, and he was good. It was in a movie called Honeysuckle Rose that was
It's some made-for-TV stuff. Then he probably did like some of The Gamblers or something.
Yeah. But he and Gary Busey were actually producers on this. And it's a great film. It's a great little film. If you get a chance, I would check out Barbarossa.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's it for this episode. Let's go around the table and everybody can say where to find them.
This is Dan. You can find me on Twitter, DanGraney67, GRANEY.
This is Brad. You can find me on Facebook in the League of Show Sharers or on ReviewSTL.com.
And this is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at KevinRBrackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. If you want to find the show, you can do it at Facebook.com/RealSpoilers or at RealSpoilers.com. So I guess that's it for this episode. No idea what we're doing next time. So thanks for tuning in. And until then, Ethan, let's Debbie live.
I'm on the train that's bound for Santa Fe. And I'm free like the wind, like I'm gonna live forever.
It's a feeling time can never take away. All I need's a few more dollars, and I'm out of here to stay. Dreams come true, yes they do, in Santa Fe.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.